It is a perfect summer night. There is almost no wind. It's pretty hot. Been pretty hot today. It's probably 75, 80 degrees out here right now. The leaves aren't even moving. Last few planes coming in. It's after midnight. Time for a walk and talk podcast. Podcast 849, the Bob Davis Podcast. Well, there's a revolution going on in this country, and it is called the Payment Processing Revolution. And I am working with a new company. Actually, I've been working with these guys for quite a while. Payment processor by the name of ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. Took me a long time to really get down to the nub of what they do. And I think this is so important, talking with my friends Kevin Hill and Greg Lowry over at ReliaFund. Basically, this is what they do. They are really good at integrating their systems with your systems, your accounting systems, your website, you know, all of the things that businesses today, in order to be really effective. And let's suppose that you have a payment processing option on your CRM. You know, these guys can get in there and make it all work with your system. So if you're putting in new systems, if you are developing a new e-commerce site, if you're adding a CRM and you're going to have a payment processing option on the CRM, then you want to talk to ReliaFund because they've been doing this for 20 years. And what they do is provide integrated solutions to get payments cleared. And they do it very well. They've been doing it for a long time. And they do it for some pretty big companies. And the stuff that I've seen them do works really well. I have a check, payment by check option on my website at thebobdavispodcast.com, which ReliaFund manages. And it works seamlessly. So here's what you do. You owe it to yourself if you're in business for yourself to check out ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. That's how I found them. They have no long-term contracts. They answer the phone, so you will talk to a human being. Ask for Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. They're secure and technology-focused. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. If you click on their ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, it takes you to their contact page, and all the information is right there. And, of course, I'll tell you more about ReliaFund in the future. And speaking of the website, thebobdavispodcasts.com, you know, I'm unique in the podcasting world because I'm a single podcaster with my own platform, selling advertising on my own platform, and people say, you know, why just one podcast? I really believe in podcasting and local podcasters as being effective. B, with over 100,000 feeds a month and, you know, tens of thousand visits to thebobdavispodcast.com and a full blog. The page itself, thebobdavispodcast.com, is becoming something that you want to be associated with. You can get the Bob Davis Podcast at iTunes, Stitcher.com for Android devices. I actually prefer Spotify for Android devices. Also, TuneIn. Google Play works with the Google voice device, and TuneIn works with Alexa. Appreciate the liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And again, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. It really came in handy on the trip, and I am still working on getting sponsors for the big trip to the border. So really appreciate donations for that. And again, it's not the $150 or the $50 donations, which I cherish, but what I'm looking for are big-time sponsors that can say, look, here's $1,500. You'll be on all the podcasts that I do heading down to the border, and I only need three or four of those before there'll be enough money in the account to be able to conduct the whole trip without too much difficulty, because you know something will go wrong. So I got to be prepared for that. So if you're into it, DM me on Facebook or through the website, send me an email, and we can talk about it. So, here we go. The rules of the walk and talk. If you have listened to the Bob Davis Podcast and you know I do these walk and talk podcasts, you know that the rule is there can't be any show prep. There's no plan in this podcast to do anything in particular. This is just off the top of my head, just taking a little walk in the loam of the night and the wet grass. Going to walk around out here in the park, and we're going to do a walk and talk podcast. And I love doing these in the summer because, obviously, it's so great to be out here. You know, when the moon is up, we have a full moon. Just got over a lunar eclipse, a full moon lunar eclipse. So it's a it's a waning moon, but it's still really full, and it is stunningly beautiful out here. And it's great to walk around, and in bare feet of all things as well. So, you know, there's been a lot going on lately, and a lot in the news going on lately, and a lot with podcasting going on lately since I got back from my trip around the Mid-South and Midwest. Just kind of a preliminary kind of let's see what's going on out there in quote-unquote Middle America. And I feel like I need to consolidate some of those podcasts. There's been a bunch of things between the Pledge of Allegiance situation in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and that coverage and reaction to it. I spent probably 5 days just pretty much all day managing social media and dealing with people who were upset at coverage and addressing that, and also just kind of doing more research on the pledge and everything else. And so there's that. And then I just finished a podcast, and it was surprising how quickly that entered the realm of news, this last podcast, which was on this question as to whether the president would win re-election by a landslide. And I went through all the states that he won in his electoral victory in 2016, and I talked also about the midterms in 2018. So I would direct people to those podcasts. And in the interim, I talked about this sort of peak summer perfect moment. It is so weird to me because I will do a podcast like peak summer, and you know, that's almost a throwaway. I don't mean it as just forget about it, it's no big deal. But I love that podcast because it was about the feeling, and this was before the eclipse. Just this incredible momentary feeling of this perfection of summer that that I experienced. And usually, you know, before eclipses, and this is going to sound really woo-woo, but it's true because I've experienced it for real when I covered the actual full eclipse, you know, the solar eclipse a couple of years ago with my friend Steve. We were actually located at the longest point of the eclipse in the world, which was Maconda, Illinois, as I recall. It's Maconda. I don't remember even how to spell it. But it's down in southern Illinois by some major state park down there. And we got, by accident, literally got driven up to the X where the longest point of totality occurred. And eclipse energy, pre-eclipse energy and post-eclipse energy, and energy and human beings' energetic reactions to things like eclipses are real. And for me, things like full moons, and I believe the lunar cycles really do affect people. I don't know so much about things like Mercury retrograde that people talk about, or planets in retrograde. The moon is genuinely an orb which has a magnetic field, and the sun definitely has a magnetic field. And when they're occulted, when the planet passes in front of the sun and the moon, and there's a shadow of the earth or the sun or whatever on the moon, you know, I believe those things, you know, even scientifically, astronomically speaking, there's energetic flows. You know, I mentioned this before, the sun and the sun and earth in particular are actually connected. They're actually plugged into each other, energetically speaking, with radiation from the sun plugging into the Earth's magnetic field. And so they are actually connected. And this is something I read from NASA. I didn't make this up, and I didn't get it from some bizarre astrology magazine. So there's an energetic field. There's magnetic fields and energetic fields that are involved with all of this. And usually what happens with full moons with me is I feel it before. A lot of people feel the moon after it's been full or on the full. I usually get the energy a couple of days or even a week before. So I did that summertime's peak summer podcast just about a week or so before the full moon and before the eclipse because I was really feeling it. Now I'm kind of tired and lackadaisical and just don't really have a lot of energy the last couple of days, aside from the fact that I've been working around the clock on a lot of different projects. But the thing that was interesting about the peak summer thing was that somebody just did a show called Peak Summer One of the late night shows did this whole thing called Peak Summer a day or two after I did that podcast. I find that fascinating. What else? The whole thing about Trump and the battleground states kind of blew up in the last 24 hours with this whole squad controversy over the president, you know, making certain claims, and then the left returning fire by saying he's a racist, and then there's the usual collection of people that feel the need to go out and defend the president as though he can't defend himself. And, you know, I did that podcast so that everybody would know what the stakes are for this president, because it's the minions who are saying he's going to have a landslide victory. And what I said in that podcast was, you know, I'm not going to say it wouldn't happen, but I'm going to tell you that if you expect it to happen, you better plan on getting out and working for him, including going over to Pennsylvania and knocking on doors. You know, if you're from Iowa, or if you're from Montana, or if you're from Minnesota and you're a big Trump guy, you know, you probably should plan on heading out and actually working in some of these states that are going to be battleground states, in addition to your own, unless you're in one of these states like Tennessee or whatever. And it's interesting to me that I mentioned North Carolina, because North Carolina is one of those southern states that, while he won North Carolina by a pretty healthy margin, I don't remember what it was, but it's a healthy margin. I want to say it was like 6 points or something. It could have been four, which is still healthy. 6 points. I think it was 6 points or more that he won North Carolina by. In 2016, there were some pretty close congressional races there in 2018. And with Charlotte growing as a banking center, you're getting a lot of people in North Carolina who aren't necessarily the rock rib Republican religious people that we associate with deeper southern states like North Carolina. The other thing is that ethnic voters in North Carolina don't, if they can be turned out, they do not tend to vote Republican. So I was a little surprised to see that he went down there and made that speech at a rally in North Carolina. So it's clearly he's trying to shore up his vote in North Carolina. Again, prescient in terms of a podcast, because now suddenly everyone is talking about that. And, you know, we used to have this problem in talk radio, and you'd send out tapes and you'd try to get a job. I really had this problem, because I had a system of prepping shows where I was always way ahead of the curve. And so I would do these shows, which at the time were way ahead and very edgy. And so you'd send the tape out to somebody 6 months or a year later, and they would say, well, I don't understand why you're talking about that, because that's, you know, everybody's talking about that. No, you don't understand. Not everybody was talking about that in April. You know what I'm saying? So here we are again, where you've got these podcasts that if you take the time, and that's why I did it, if you take the time and listen to that now, you're going to be way ahead of the game in terms of this whole battleground issue, because the people who are getting paid to grind political axe, or to defend the president, or to promote the president, or feel the need to, because they think they're on the team and they're just imitating what they're hearing and seeing in other media, are, you know, going to tell you he's going to win by a landslide. Well, you know, at this point, flip a coin, maybe or maybe not. And some people would tell you there's no way. And you'd have to listen to that. I'm not going to go through all that. You'd have to listen to the podcast, because I went through every state that he won. And I'm talking about battleground states. I don't have to look at Alabama. I don't have to look at Mississippi. I don't have to look at Louisiana. I don't have to look at even South Carolina, because the chances are he's going to win those again. So the red states, when they talk about firing up the base, you know, they're firing up the base in places like Tennessee and Kentucky, where they're not in trouble anyway, at least in terms of the presidential contest. I went to the St. Louis Park City Council meeting and recorded this first protest of mostly non-St. Louis Park residents about, you know, how dare you, quote unquote, ban the pledge. And on and on and on. And the coda to that story is the St. Louis Park City Council voted to reinstate the pledge, which I thought they would probably do anyway, just to basically, score the wound so that, that it it's over with. And I had some very interesting emails and personal messages on social media, and, you know, very emotional, and usually condemning me because I had the nerve to ask people who came to the protest what town they were from, and how dare you, and why is that a big deal? And I thought, well, it's a big deal because you're not residents of the town that you're protesting this event, and you're demanding that city council people resign in a rather impolite manner. And I thought it was news that people understand that these people came from other towns, nowhere near, most of them nowhere near St. Louis Park, to voice their, you know, their electoral, supposedly, anger at the city council for their crimes against humanity. And in the process, did a lot of research on the pledge, and I have to conclude that the pledge is really a... And if you listen to the podcast, you'll understand at the end. I think the pledge is an oath to the state, which is not American. And the origin of the pledge really is in the Civil War period. Somebody at some point pointed out that before the Civil War, Americans did not fly flags, and they really didn't talk about patriotism. It was really something that happened after the Civil War, because we were attempting to bind up the wounds and to emphasize union and the United States versus these United States. And that's the environment that the pledge was born in. And if you take the time to read the history of the pledge, which I put links up on the website too, you'll see that that what you're essentially doing... And I'm going to say this because it's really important, because I didn't say this in the podcast. The most significant contribution of the American Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, the two founding documents of the United States, is probably, and this is reaffirmed even in the Federalist, is probably the affirmation of the individual as sovereign, and as those sovereign rights given to us by, you know, the higher power, not, and they said God, so I will say God. So in other words, they are natural law gives us our personal sovereignty. And when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, by definition, you are pledging to the state, which means you're disavowing the most significant contribution in history when it comes to governments, which is that human beings are sovereign. And they share that sovereignty or delegate that sovereignty to representatives in a representative republic to run the government for them so that they can pursue happiness and live their lives. That's the whole basis of our country. So I'm appalled that no one even noticed that. And I find it actually humorous that you have these people who have spent 10 years studying the Constitution at these Tea Party meetings, and that's who showed up for this thing. And they don't seem to know that the most significant contribution of the founding documents was personal sovereignty. And it has nothing to do with the pledge. Now, if you want to say the pledge, fine. I'm not against saying the pledge. And if you really believe in the pledge emotionally, it's not a problem. I don't have a problem with that. I just think it's interesting that this event provided me an opportunity to research the pledge. And I'm not... And this is my whole point about the right in this country being engaged in an emotional, cultural war with people they perceive as taking away a way of life. And they think that it's... my sense is that they think it's a conspiracy, that people from other countries are engaged in this effort to break down the barriers and to break down the cultural norms in the United States. And I'm certainly not going to address that in a podcast, but I see that that's not a thoughtful conclusion. That's a very, very emotional conclusion, and it's an emotional way of thinking. My sense really is that for most of these people in their 50s and 60s and 70s, their perception is that the country was a certain way in the 1950s when they were, it's like comfort food, you know, meatloaf and mashed potatoes. There was a certain sense of country when these people were growing up in the late 40s and early 50s, and that is a comfortable feeling, and they want to return to that. But the 1950s were anything but that. It's just that because we, many of us, were children during that period of time, there's a perception of protection and comfort because they were children. And so, of course, children feel that way. And I imagine someday people will be nostalgic for the 1990s or the 1980s in the same sort of way. I don't think that's enough to say that that's a political base that is thoughtful, that's saying, here's our platform, here's our ideas, you know, here's our specific ideas, which I've continued to say that the Republican Party needed to do, and they never have, because Trump doesn't care about that. So when people say, well, what are your biases? Like, what do you think? What do you think we should do? You know, what's your solution? What do you think? And it's like, well, it's not a question of what I think. When you're observing politics and you see something that other people don't see, you know, my job is to talk about it, and your job is to think about what you think about it. It isn't for me to tell you what we should be doing. That's me doing your work for you. That's the person in the media telling people how they should think. And I don't like doing that. And the reason for that is, you know, you try to convince people of a certain point of view, and you convince certain people at your own peril of a certain point of view. And then people get elected and they do things, and the result isn't what you expected it to be. And then you feel responsible for that because you had to argue for that point of view. I think people need to do their own homework, and I think people need to think things through. And so these podcasts, when we talk about politics in these podcasts, I'm not grinding a political axe. I'm not going to tell you what I think you should do. And people say, well, you know, either you're a snake in the grass because you're using leftist tactics, which is ridiculous because I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm just, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance thing, those people told their own story. I didn't say hardly anything until the end when I said, this is what I think. But I didn't say anything. Those people were the ones that were uncivil. And I have to tell you, many people listened to that podcast and they switched political parties. They changed their view of some of those people. They said, if I heard it once, I heard it 20 times. People said, I was appalled. And I didn't hardly even edit that. Those people told their own story their own way. And so they made their bed. Let's talk about bias a little bit in the time that I have left, because I think it's really important. People say, well, why don't you criticize the Democrats? So I'm going to answer this question of why I don't criticize the Democrats. I don't think very much about the Democrats at all, because my main concerns going forward are economic and, to a secondary extent, security related. So foreign policy. And when I talk about foreign policy, I'm talking about not foreign policy like, we ought to go over there and bleh, but what is the principle that we're going to follow from a foreign policy perspective? If you're a Republican, you know, or a Democrat, what's your idea of how we're going to conduct ourselves in the world? No one's laying that out. My biggest concerns are economic. And in general, I don't think of the Democrats at all, because I think they have some really, really bad ideas. And bad ideas in particular on economics. And I don't think of them at all because I absolutely... what's the word? Reject their economic ideas wholly, because they don't make any sense. You know, because they're all trying to figure out how to buy off constituencies the same way the Republicans do, which is to buy off constituencies by providing them with a certain resource. So whatever they do is not going to lead to economic growth, and it's not going to solve the United States' considerable economic problems, which, by the way, the president has not solved, and the Republican Party has not solved. And national populism, which is what Republicans are today, isn't going to solve. So when you say, well, why don't you criticize the Democrats? There's just no point in it, because I don't I'm not going to tell you why their ideas are bad. You're going to have to do your own homework and figure that out. And if you can't figure that out and all you can come up with is national populism, or I don't like Ilhan Omar because she married her brother, allegedly, you know, or, and by the way, if you don't like Ilhan Omar, if you don't like the St. Louis Park City Council, then get over here and run some people and win. You know, if you think Ilhan Omar is going to have problems getting reelected in the 5th District, especially now, you're out of your mind. So criticize Democrats? Why bother? Because you're going to have to do your own homework if you don't like Democrats. If you're a Democrat and you love Democrats, great. You know, whatever. You know, it's... I'm not going to sit here and criticize Democrats. I criticize Republicans because the Republican Party is the party in charge. So the president is a Republican, or I would say ostensibly a Republican. I don't think he's a Republican, at least the Republican Party that I know. They also have the Senate and a fairly reliable majority on the Supreme Court. So the Republican Party is defending, and they are running the country. They're governing. So as the Republican Party is governing, then they're the ones that have to respond to the things that they're doing, particularly in the executive branch. You know, people say, well, the Democrats, you know, they've got a majority in the House, and they do. And unfortunately, nothing is going to happen that the House wants to have happen until they get the Senate, and nothing is going to happen that they want the president to do until they elect a president. So the Republicans are, you know, the ones playing defense, and they're the ones that have to answer for the policies that they've put into place, first as a full majority with the House and the Senate, and now with the Senate and the president and a good part, they've, you know, he's been able to appoint a quote-unquote conservative justices to the point now where... what is it, 5-4 conservative or 6-3 conservative on the court? So there's a huge disconnect. And I've said this and said this and said this. I don't know whether or when it's going to come home to roost, but I would imagine it's going to be soon, you know, a year or two or three or sooner, that this disconnection and failure to serve is deeply disturbing. And I'm not very optimistic about it. I think it's because we don't have people that are, we don't really have true servants in government. We have a lot of people who are, you know, they just want to be important, and they're just there. And so that leaves room for radicals and people who say harsh things and people who tweet and people who use social media to fire up the base and so forth and so on both sides to say and do really dumb things. And apparently no one is immune from that. So, you know, while people are getting emotionally upset about the pledge, things are happening that that are just sort of below the surface, and they just continue to happen. And at some point, economically, or in terms of foreign policy, or even in terms of domestic policy, at some point, one of these things is going to catch fire, and the fire is going to spread through the building. And I don't know what kind of crisis is going to occur, but I'm soft pedaling it. So what I've decided to do is to pick my battles and just not even have a battle, but just say, hey, look, this is something that you ought to think about. And people take a title or they take a piece and they only hear every third word. And so then they say, well, you said this. And it's like, no, that's not what I meant. You know, well, you're just a, you know, how come, why don't you criticize Democrats, huh? It's like, why would I even say anything about Democrats? They haven't had a good idea in 45 years that I can think of. I mean, I kid around and I say sometimes, I'll say, well, you know, sometimes the Democrats are right. Sometimes they are right about stuff. But in terms of ideas, no, I haven't heard any good ideas about economics or even foreign policy. You know, it's easy to criticize when you're not in power. So, you know, and I don't have time in this podcast, and I could do 10 more podcasts critiquing Democratic administrations and everything else. I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to stop criticizing Republicans because I am shocked. Shocked, I say, at the number of people who, you know, who are even doing their own media, who just rush out and feel the need to defend the president because he tweeted some silly thing out. here's what he really meant. He's actually playing four-dimensional chess. You know, he's way smarter, and everybody has to tell everybody else what he's trying to do. Why don't you just let him tell everyone what he's trying to do and let it just stand? Why is it that people have to rush out and say, Ilhan Omar really means this? You know, I don't know what she means. You know, my friend Joe does, who has a podcast or is on some radio station, he doesn't know anything about what the president is thinking or have any personal experience or knowledge of the president at all. You know, and just shaking the president's hand or going to the airplane hangar to see the president come in, that's not a personal relationship with the president, regardless of who the president is. These people don't know who the president is. They don't know. And the ones who do aren't going to say. They're going to go out and they're going to defend because that's what they're paid to do. And so you're living in this massive manipulation. And so what you have to do is, you know, you have to sit down and you have to spend some time and actually research these things. And people depend too much on other people to tell them things. Well, what about this? You know, well, what about it? Look it up. Well, I don't understand. I mean, I don't, they don't know, if they don't want to read history because that's, they don't want to read history. So then they don't know what to look up when somebody says, you know, what would be the effect of a hydrogen bomb being dropped on Ground Zero in Minneapolis? You know, well, I don't know. They don't want to look that up because that's too hard for them to look that up. Or, you know, what is string theory? You know, really? Well, you know, it's all the information about it is right there on the internet. And you can, if you can read, then you can figure it out. But they don't want to do that. They just want to have somebody tell them what it is because that's easier. And usually it's somebody that they know, quote unquote, and trust. And I'll tell you, and I'm going to close with this. I think it's Showtime, but I'm not sure. It might be HBO, has this Loudest Voice show, which is about Fox News and Roger Ailes. And I'm sure that it's somewhat biased. I'm sure there's two different points of view. But the arguments that predicated Fox News, I think, are probably fairly accurate. And it's worth seeing to really understand how people who manipulate public opinion operate and think. And so it's stuff like that, that people don't, they don't want to, they can't stand something, they can't stand to watch something they disagree with or think about something that might in any way challenge a certain point of view. They just can't stand it. And then, so then they search for and find things that reinforce their own personal biases. And what I'm doing in these podcasts is I'm refusing to play that game. So everyone hates me, which is great. You know, I'm a subversive. Yes, it's very subversive to look at the whole thing and say, you know, maybe we should throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, maybe we should think about getting rid of the government in total. Maybe we don't need a government. I don't know. I mean, if you think about it and zero base it that way, well, it's a whole different thought process. You're not thinking Republican and Democrat anymore. You're thinking, you know, what exactly does this government do? You're thinking about it in a more objective manner because you're not thinking of it in terms of Democrat bad, Republican good, or Republican bad, racist, horrible, gross, you know, child abusers versus Democrats, good, wonderful, or vice versa. Democrats, bad, subversive, communists, you know, who are trying to ruin the country, blah, 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 blah. I think the government itself overall is doing a real good job right now of putting the country in a pretty big danger. And I don't think it's a Republican or Democrat thing. I think it's just I call it dead stick. I think the thing is just floating along. Nobody's really guiding it in any particular direction. And there's a lot of rhetoric and a lot of angry and emotional speech and a lot of emotional response to manipulation in all these different media platforms. And people get things wrong and they get confused. And they go off half-cocked or not cocked at all and are all emotional and furious about everything and quote-unquote convinced they're right. And I'm just going to close with this. I used to do the same thing. And I used to think I was right. And I have seen many examples of how I was not right in the years that now I've gotten away from doing a daily talk radio show and activating that group of people that you play to over and over again because they call the radio station or they respond. There's a different world out here. And it isn't the world that one side agrees with or the other side disagrees with. It's just the world. And things are moving along, and there's a whole bunch of people on the planet that weren't here before, and they don't think the way the people who were here before think. And we have to figure out how we're going to continue the precepts of personal sovereignty and government in check going ahead that isn't tied into all of these flashpoint biased immediate response, right or wrong issues. And if we can't learn to listen to something or watch something that we might disagree with, then we're not going to be able to do anything. So I'm done telling people what they're supposed to think. And have been for quite some time. And it's one of the reasons I went and covered the primaries. And it's one of the reasons that I don't do politics as much as I used to. Because people want you to tell them what they're supposed to think. And my response is, you got to figure it out for yourself. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 849. A little disaffected and tired after a lunar eclipse on a beautiful summer night. And I think I'm just going to sit out here and finish my coffee and enjoy the rest of this fabulous evening. Don't forget Alpha Systems, the people that make the Alpha AOA. If you're a pilot and you're heading over to EAA at the air show in Oshkosh, they are there in Building 3. Look for Alpha Systems. Remember, they make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator, which saves lives in general aviation. I'll tell you more about it in the future, but click on the Alpha Systems banner for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 849. Crazy.